Welcome to an NL full-time podcast. We've got the National League to talk about, always the craziest of leagues, the semi-finals of the FA Trophy, the National League South, where we have champions-elect, not yet crowned, and the National League North. And let's start with a quick mention, more detail to follow later on. Dickie, we have congratulations in order for Tamworth, who not only have secured the National League North title, but completed back-to-back promotions. Incredible.
Yep. Jumping two divisions in two seasons is an incredible achievement by Andy Peakes and his side. They're going to be a National League team again next year. I can't remember the last time that Tamworth were a National League side. It's a good few years now. But yeah, they're back, and they've done it in quite some style as well. I mean, they're a long way clear of the team in second place, so I don't think there can be any arguments over, you know, whether they have a right to be there. They've run away with it in the same way, not to quite the extent that Chesterfield have, but they've just stretched and stretched that lead, even to the point where they've been able to, you know, withstand one or two dodgy results in the last couple of weeks and still get it over the line.
Yeah, fantastic. Congratulations to Tamworth. More from you on them and from Joe as well, I'm sure, to follow. Let's, with our second billing today, let's make reference, and good reference, of course, to the FA Trophy semi-finals. Three of the four sides involved were from the National League and from the upper end of the National League. Sadly, that's it for Macclesfield. They bow out. When you saw they were 2-0 down early on, thanks to Warman and Whelan goals, after 25 minutes, feared for them whether it might be another one of those Gateshead huge drubbings, but Macclesfield stayed in the game. Kane Drummond pulled a goal back, but sadly for them, they couldn't find an equaliser. So Gateshead progress back to back might just be the theme this week, mightn't it, to their second consecutive FA Trophy final. In the other game, it was a little bit more of a surprise result, but Joe, Bromley against Solihull Moors. Should we ever really be surprised by Solihull Moors anymore?
Not anymore. You know, Andy Wing's side have got better and better as the season's gone on. And, you know, I think I probably fancied Solihull to go and win yesterday because I haven't wholly been impressed with Bromley of late. They've sort of been drifting into second place. And, yeah, Solihull, an unlikely scorer. Obviously, Alex Whitmore getting two goals. Yeah, you know, it's a collective effort, isn't it, to try and get to Wembley in the FA Trophy. So everybody chipping in, and they obviously had a couple of players back from injury. I see Mark Beck was back after a broken nose. It's all rather rosy for Solihull. Obviously, both teams at Wembley, obviously Gateshead for the second year running, and it might not be the last time that we see either of those sides at Wembley this year, given that they're both in the playoff race.
Yeah. Or Bromley, of course, who could also be at Wembley. They may well be facing just one home game to get there if they secure second or third place. And had they got there, they'd have been there for the second time in 2 years, having won the FA Trophy 2 years ago. I can only look on from afar, seeing all these teams making all these visits to Wembley. Sadly, for an Aldershot Town fan, it still never happened. And after Saturday's results, it's even less likely. But we'll get there in due course. Dickie, I've got to come back to you on this because I think non-league finals day is now written in bold capitals, underlined, rubber stamped, and everything for you. What a lineup! Not just a Midlands team in Solihull Moors and a side that you know well and you visited a few times, but in the FA Vars as well. We have another two stories, one for you in your part of the world and one for somebody who's been on this pod quite regularly.
We have, yeah. We're not quite there in the Vars. There is a slight condition on that one.
Oh, it's because, two legs, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And Worcester City's game last weekend, their first leg, was postponed last week due to a waterlogged pitch. So they ended up playing their first leg yesterday at Sixway Stadium, where Worcester Warriors rugby team used to play. So nice surroundings for them, and they got a 1-0 win. So they take a 1-0 win to Great Wakering Rovers, I think it is, in the second leg. But yeah, the team that has confirmed their place there is Romford, Romford got a goalless draw at Lincoln United yesterday, having drawn 2-2 in the first game. Don't know whether, I don't think away goals count, so I'm guessing it must have gone to a penalty shootout. But Romford are
It
there.
did.
It did. Romford are there, and that means Scott Doe, who's been a guest on this programme, who is a TNT sports analyst. We spoke to him about it a few weeks ago and said, we would imagine that TNT Sports would absolutely love the idea of somebody who they employ as an analyst on a periodic basis actually taking part in the game. What an angle that would be. And it's happened. So, yeah, that will be a great angle to look out for on non-league finals day.
Saturday, the 11th of May at 3 o'clock is the kickoff time. Listeners, if you've never been to non-league finals day, make the effort. It's the Wembley experience, but it's two games in one. It's a terrific day out, and certainly we'll be there to cover the FA Trophy final element of it. And yeah, Dickie, in your case, hopefully you get to see Worcester there as well. And it's going to be a bit of a Midlands fest on that day. Right, let's crack on then. Chesterfield obviously long since done and dusted, and they were without a game on Saturday. Barnet sitting the best placed of the remaining teams, remain second on Sunday morning as we record this, but they had to be content with just a point. As Maidenhead, to be perfectly honest, 2-0 up, looked like they'd just about mathematically almost be to a position of safety, but they didn't count on Barnet doing what Barnet do, staying in the game, coming back with another Callum Stead goal, and then Nicky Kabamba from the penalty spot, pretty much on 90 minutes, getting a point for Barnet, one that will just keep confidence levels high, I guess, Joe, you know, keep them in a good place, and you know, Kabamba is having his best ever goal scoring season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at this point for Barnet, it's just about that rhythm of keep collecting points and going into the end of the season in as good a form as they can. So, yeah, the fact that they were able to come from behind, get a point from that game, I think will please Brennan. And obviously the fact that they've managed to change it so much in one game will count in good stead potentially for the playoffs, given that you have to, you know, think on your feet and try and solve solutions during games if it's not going well. So yeah, good point in the end. And obviously, as for Maidenhead, you know, we were doubtful of whether they would stay up, but they've put that run together that we thought they might, wouldn't they? You know, a couple of good wins and a good point against Barnet. So yeah, they look like they're safe for another season.
Yeah, well done, Dev. And can you kindly stop devving everybody now? I just worked out, looking at the league table, that all bar a ridiculous swing in goal difference, Barnet have confirmed that they will finish in second or third place now. The only side that can catch them, well, technically Gateshead, I guess, could. They got five games left, so maybe that's a moot point. I was going to say Solihull Moors in fifth place can reach the number of points Barnet have got, but they are something like 18 goals worse off. Bromley remained third without playing, 74 points, and Altrincham were only able to pick up 1 point at Dorking. They had a man sent off late on in that one, and Dorking threw everything at them. And Altrincham forced another couple of good saves from Harrison Mayall, who's had a terrific week. And for Dorking, Joe, well, they've just played Aldershot and Altrincham from the top seven or eight positions, and battled really hard. They've come out unbeaten in those two games, but what they'd have given just to have won one of them and had 3 points rather than two.
Yeah, especially given the position they're in, you know, wins are really, really important. And yeah, I think Mark White will be a little bit conflicted. Obviously, he'll be pleased on the one hand that they've managed to put in two really good performances against two good sides, but on the other hand, they'll be disappointed that they haven't managed to get all 3 points in those. Obviously, you know, I'm looking at the game yesterday, and it's another game which is sort of hallmarked by Dorking's ghosts of past. You know, I think another injury yesterday, Jason Pryor going off after 18 minutes. So yeah, when it doesn't rain, it pours for for Dorking. But yeah, a good point ordinarily, but given the position they're in, they need more.
We'll have a closer look at the bottom end of the National League table a little bit later in the pod. So Solihull Moors and Gateshead are fifth and sixth and obviously involved in FA Trophy action yesterday, but very, very well placed to make the playoffs, and probably one more win will do it for both of them. Gateshead, of course, got five games left. Then comes a little mini league of three teams competing for probably just one, the final playoff place. And ironically, they all kicked off at different times on Saturday, so let's cover them in chronological order. The lunchtime kickoff was Oldham at home to Rochdale. Definitely a derby, undoubtedly a derby. Nobody was disputing that that was a derby. And it began well for Oldham, taking the lead through Hallam, who gave them plenty of hope early on. But Rochdale are in pretty decent form. They stayed in the game. They got themselves level. It ended 1-1. So frustration for Oldham. It kept them at that time still 4 or 5 points behind Aldershot and Halifax, and doesn't quite end their playoff hopes, Dickie, but it's going to take something special now, I guess, particularly with one result that came later in the day. But just focusing in on Oldham, there's no getting away from it. It's an underachievement this season.
I think it is, yeah. I mean, we know that, dropping down from it's tough, isn't it? When you're coming into the National League, but Oldham had have higher aspirations than just to be a competitive National League side. They want to get back into the Football League, and yeah, at one point, having appointed Mickey Mellon, and some of the changes it made, it looked as if they were going to be the side that made that late run to get into the playoffs. But yeah, they've tied up with the finishing line in sight, or with that seventh place in sight. Probably haven't got the production that they would have hoped for from some of they'd strengthened their forward line incredibly. That one they have almost an embarrassment of riches at one point, but it's not really paid off for them, unfortunately. And yeah, it looks like they're going to miss out.
Yeah, I believe that Andrew Dallas is still waiting for his first Oldham goal, and he came incredibly close in that game late on to what would have been a winner and might have just got him going. Next up, then, along with the 3 o'clock kickoffs, was Aldershot Town visiting Hartlepool United. I was at that game, I commentated on it, and prior to the game, I caught up with a familiar face.
I've been joined by BBCT's Rob Law. The pair of us, it's the two Robbies today doing the BBC commentaries for Tees and for Surrey and Sussex on Hartlepool United against Aldershot. Feels a bit odd, Rob, not necessarily coming here again to Victoria Park, because I think we all know the highs and the lows that have happened, but with Aldershot in the loftier perch, with Aldershot in that final playoff place, and Hartlepool bobbling around the middle somewhere. Just bring us up to date on this season for Hartlepool and how you find yourselves where you are now.
Oh, well, it's been a roller coaster, which it always is for Hartlepool United. Whenever you're covering this football club, it's one thing we always say is that it's never dull, and this season has proven exactly that. So, started the campaign under John Askey, former York City manager, of course, was doing really well and got a good run of results together, but there was always that feeling that the squad was perhaps a little bit light. The starting 11 was really strong, but outside of that 11, the quality and the strength and depth, if you like, just wasn't quite there. And it got up to the game against Chesterfield early in the campaign, where Pools went 2-0 up within the first 10 minutes, and everybody thought, wow, this is the season that we all hoped for. Hartlepool doing really well and being able to bounce back at the first attempt. But after that 10 minutes, the season as a whole just rapidly unravelled in one game, effectively. Injuries to main players, Anthony Mancini being one of those. He was a standout performer early in the campaign. Goals, assists, a bit of flair. Something that outside of him, Poole's just severely lacked. He went down, he tore his hamstring almost off the bone. That's where the injuries started to mount up, and from that point onwards they just
lost a centre back that day, a key centre back as well, didn't
yeah
they?
Dan Dodds, he went out as well, so the the injuries have just been persistent throughout the entire campaign, and in those injuries they lost two key players. Pierce from the back with Dan Dodds, former Middlesbrough defender, was also at Darlington once upon a time, and then Mancini, who I mentioned, who just was had that spark, something out of nothing, just haven't been able to replace those players since. And that's been the story of the season. John Askey couldn't rally, couldn't sort of get a reaction out of his players, and at times, to his own admission, you know, in interviews, post-match interviews, I lost count of the amount of times he said, like, I've tried everything, we are really at a loss. He's even said himself, I've never been at a club and had a run like this before. And you could see it. Rob, you will have stood in front of managers in similar positions where things just aren't dropping for them, and you can tell when a manager is just physically and emotionally drained and done. And sadly, that was where Askey was right at the end of his tenure.
Probably where Luke Garrard is right now for Boreham Wood.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. You know, we've all seen that in managers, haven't we? You know, as fans, as commentators, as broadcasters. And they made the change. And, you know, in comes Kevin Phillips after Anthony Sweeney and Lenny Lawrence took caretaker charge for a time. And he's really just been very brutally honest with the press, which is what you always want in interviews, and he's been brutally honest with the players as well. And it got a reaction, albeit a couple of defeats more recently, but they seem to be on the right track. And you just feel that, and I'm sure Aldershot fans can probably relate to this, is you feel that this summer for Pools is a really big summer. There's a lot of restructuring going on behind the scenes, but also on the pitch as well, and that's where it's going to be vital for next season.
And there's always two sides to a football club, the on the pitch and the off. You'll have to bring us up to date on the NL full-time podcast if you can. We I seem to remember earlier in the season Raj Singh saying that he's not going to be able to carry on long term. He won't walk away and leave them in the brown stuff, but presumably he is not going to invest considerably. So is the fresh investment coming on board? Any word of it?
No, to be frank, not as yet. That has sort of been on and off all season long. There has been interested parties. It's been quite public in the to-ing and fro-ing. We've interviewed both parties, both Raj Singh and the prospective consortium that has been put together to try and take over. They had quite a public falling out, both at different ends of the scale of what they wanted and where they could meet in the middle. Couldn't happen. Raj Singh said, right, that's it. You know, we need to put that to bed and focus on the season because it had gone so terribly wrong, and results weren't great at that time. So since then, he's remained just this week and said that the club is still up for sale, that he is now taking a backward step, albeit is saying that he will still fund the football club. He wants to put a board in place between now and the end of the season. We've had Ronnie Moore come in as the new chief scout, and obviously he is well loved by the Hartlepool United faithful because he engineered the great escape once upon a time. So there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes which haven't helped certainly the on the field matters, but it's just been a total on both hands, on the field and off the field. There's just been so much change, so many question marks, so many unanswered questions, that it's not surprising sat here with a couple of games left to go and Hartlepool United still not mathematically safe
in a division where you could throw a blanket over the bottom half. It's likely that one more win will do it. I don't think 50 points will be enough. You're on 53 at the minute, 54 and upwards, so maybe a draw, maybe a win, and the sooner it comes for Hartlepool, of course, the better. Just focusing in, this podcast will be going out after the game, but just as we look towards it now, obviously Mancini out again, so yeah, probably for the season now. Di Zarouve still doing the bits and pieces up front for you. And without his goals, it could have been worse, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And Kevin Phillips has said that on the record, you know, and just on your points total. I mean, Kevin Phillips this week saying he's challenged the Hartlepool players with getting to 60 points this season, which, you know, they need 8 more points between now and the end of the campaign to achieve that. But Manny Di Zarouve, yeah, if Hartlepool United didn't have him, they'd be in a relegation fight, well and truly in a relegation fight. He's been the difference. He's a lovely guy. I mean, just, you know, as much as on the field it matters what happens on the field, off the pitch he's just brilliant to interview. We've interviewed him a couple of times. He's even done co-commentary with us this season. But a lovely chap, and one who is having the season of his life. And just the other week, he etched his name in Hartlepool United club history. Just the fourth player in the last 50 years to reach 20 league goals for the football club. That probably tells you more about Hartlepool United's last 50 years than it does about Manny Desiruwe. But yeah, I mean, he's a top player. And if they do have ambitions, Rob, next season to be where Aldershot are, to be fighting in and amongst the playoffs and for promotion, Manny Desiruwe has to stay at the football club. It's as simple as that.
Well, that was Rob Law. And we ended that little chat with the question, would it be Desiruwe against Tolage? Well, do you know, it was Desiruwe. It was who put Hartlepool ahead with a 20th minute penalty. And Tolage let fly with one of the best free kicks I've seen. But Jameson just jumped, straight armed it over the bar and kept Aldershot out. Jameson denied Josh Stokes three times in the first 8 minutes of the second half. Aldershot playing beautifully against the wind. Kean Harries just clipping balls over the top and Stokes ghosting onto them. But sadly, it was a blank for Aldershot. Despite a pretty dominant performance from start to finish, Hartlepool showed a new string to their bow. They were without the ball for an awful lot of the time, and they had a lot of defending to do. But in truth, Aldershot were good in all but the final third. They couldn't score. Hartlepool broke away and scored a second from a corner in the second half. Tom Park's first goal of the season. And Kev Phillips will have been delighted with the result. Probably wanted a better performance from his side. But after the game, I caught up with Luke Waterfall, who was at the heart of the Hartlepool United defence.
From a defensive point of view, keeping a clean sheet today, you'll be encouraged by that. But it's also not a bad habit to win a game 2-0 when, in truth, you haven't dominated the possession or the ball.
Yeah, like you said, there's different ways to win a football game. Thought we played some tidy stuff in the first half. A really difficult day, to be fair, in the wind was really bad. So, like I said, there's different ways to win. You've got to deal with the conditions and all that sort of stuff. And managed to get his nose in front first half, 1-0. And like I said, we had to soak some pressure up second half and managed to score from a set piece and see the game out.
You cleared a lot of balls away from your box, something you're very, very good at, positioning yourself well. Bit of a ball magnet. You know where to be, of course. But on the few occasions that Aldershot got past the defence, they found a goalkeeper who wasn't prepared to be beaten today. Three or four moments only throughout the game, but all some very, very good depth saves, particularly from Stokes.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Like, the gaffer actually touched on that after the game. He said, you know, we defended really well, but, you know, the odd time that they did breach the back line and Pete was called upon, he did really well and pulled saves off. And, you know, that's what we're paying for. He's there to pull saves off when the teams do breach our back line. We try and keep it as to as minimal as possible, but like I said, when called upon, he pulled some saves off.
So that was Luke Waterfall, a real gutsy leader and somebody, of course, who led Grimsby to playoffs from seventh place, winning away from home after extra time, away from home after extra time, and then at Wembley. And this away from home thing, don't think it had been done before. Grimsby did it. But that's the task that awaits Joe Halifax or Aldershot or Oldham if they can sneak into that final place. We'll come to Halifax in a minute, but just how tough is it to do that if you do make the playoffs?
It is tough. I suppose you'd rather have a home game. I know, I don't want to speak for you, but I know you probably would rather Aldershot play at home given how good their home form has been this season. And yeah, you know, I think for Halifax, I think it might actually suit them, but I think the way that they play is better suited to playing away. So I think they would probably prefer to play away from home. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting. It's always difficult, isn't it? You know, going up against these tough teams on the road in games like this. So yeah, it's going to be tough for whoever gets in that last place.
So Halifax have been in pretty good form for a little while now. They've just slightly stuttered in the last couple of games, but they travelled to Agborough on Saturday, live on TNT Sports, and took on Phil Brown's rejuvenated Kidderminster side, who've picked up 26 points under him. That's six more than they've gained in the whole of the rest of the season. but still find themselves in the bottom four. And Dickie, they still do. Because despite looking promising at times yesterday, it was 0-0 for a long time in, and then Halifax did what they do. They keep it tight. They stay in games. And a certain little birthday boy celebrated at the double, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Max Wright from Halifax on target twice in that game. 66th minute goal to put them ahead. And then 1 minute from the end of normal time, 89th minute goal to make it safe. And yeah, that's added to the point that Halifax rescued from the death against York City in midweek. It's not been a bad week for them. They would have hoped for more from that game against York, but you know they were rather handed an equaliser. And then, yeah, it's not looking great for Kidderminster, unfortunately, at the moment. They've definitely been an upturn under Phil Brown. I think that stat says that. I think there was a return of a sense of optimism around the club, which I think had been lost under Russ Penn. Very unfortunate for them in that, you know, to get promoted through the playoffs and have that less preparation time for the league. But yeah, Phil Brown's done a reasonable job since going in there, but they've been hamstrung by another couple of injuries. Brown came in with, what, about a week or so left before the deadline, so hadn't really been involved in the game that much, having come back in, so they didn't really strengthen that much. They've had to make do with the players that they've got, and yeah, they're just running out of steam.
So Halifax then have stolen a march on Aldershot and Oldham, and they're now very strong favourites to finish in that seventh place position. They also have four games left, whereas Aldershot and Oldham only have three. So I think I've calculated, and this isn't mathematical, but Halifax might even only need as few as 5 points from their final 12 in order to secure the playoffs. One of the reasons I say that is on Tuesday night, Aldershot have to go away to a highly confident Gateshead in terrific form, having just made the FA Trophy final. And that's going to be long back-to-back away trips up to the northeast for Aldershot. But who knows? Expectations been high at the EBB of late. But after five games without a win now, that's the longest run of the season. Aldershot may just go and surprise a few on Tuesday. Let's wait and see. Let's just cover off a few more games involving sides around the mid-table on Saturday. There weren't many, were there, of course, but we are starting to get a little clutch of clubs now that are either mathematically safe or they're almost there. Probably let's start with Ebbsfleet and Fylde. Fylde, they climbed up to 14th prior to yesterday, and they're almost there, but they couldn't quite get across the line. Ebbsfleet it was that picked up the 3 points and moved to 52. They may still need more than that, Joe, but a terrific, terrific recovery from what looked a precarious position for both of these clubs, but for Ebbsfleet, who moved steadily towards safety yesterday thanks to that 2-1 win. And a rare name on the goal scoring sheet. He tripled his tally for the season.
Yeah, Ben Chapman, two goals yesterday. And he's, you know, Danny Sells gone in there and done a brilliant job, hasn't he? You know, given the position that they were when he came in, they needed someone to bring around quite a drastic turnaround in results. And they've managed to do that. And yeah, it looks like they'll be safe for another season, you would imagine, given that 5-point lead. As for Fylde, they're also, I would imagine, quite home and dry, given that they're 5 points adrift also, and got that really good goal difference of only -5. A point for them, just quickly, I see that youngster Gerald McCullion was on the score sheet yesterday, and that's now the third AFC Fylde Academy graduate to come and score this season after making his debut. So a really good season AFC Fylde, but also their academy as well in bringing through some quality young players.
Good stuff. The other game in that little clutch I mentioned of sides almost safe, Dagenham Redbridge on 54 points, travel to Woking, who similarly to Ebbsfleet have got themselves up to 52 points now with a win. A five-goal thriller it was in the end, but we talk about being lethal in both boxes. What about being lethal both ends of the game, Woking? Fifth-minute lead through Jermaine Anderson, and then late goals, Burko 5 minutes from time, and Luca with a 90-plus three, third for Woking. Dagenham Redbridge pulled another goal back from Connor Lawless in 90-plus five. But a huge win. And Michael Doyle's men, who only won once, I think, between September and February at home, have only lost once in the next seven games since. And that's a real turnaround. And it took a while to get the momentum going for Michael Doyle, but it does look as if his ways and methods are starting to be cemented in now. And you can't underestimate what a job he's done to get Woking on the point of safety, Joe.
No, you know, I think he's done really well, actually, as it's happened. I think they weren't firing on all cylinders, but, you know, he's changed the style a little bit, brought in some younger players. Was yesterday on the score sheet in Burko and Luca. And yeah, you know, they've steadily implemented their style of play and they've been getting the results to match for it. So, yeah, you know, it looked like they were going to be in that relegation battle, but they've managed to quite calmly move themselves away from that 1-4 and they can start planning for another season in the National League.
Eastleigh are close now as well, thanks to a 1-0 away win at York City, who are still not safe. It's the time for calm heads and cool approaches to games. And sadly, that wasn't to be the case for York City on Saturday. Xander Zizibar sent off after 73 minutes. Ryan Fallowfield with a second yellow after 77, as York, a little bit too desperate perhaps to try and win that game, ultimately ended up losing it, largely due to going down to nine men. It was 6 minutes after the second sending off that Luke Kroll scored the winner for Eastleigh, his first goal for them. Somebody I hadn't even realised had cropped up at Eastleigh. I didn't even have him on my squad list. But that's a huge win for Eastleigh, Joe. And York City can't quite pull away, can they?
No, they've obviously had got a couple of good results recently against Aldershot and disappointing for them given that they had two red cards yesterday. You know, they're going to need people fighting for the cause, and to lose two players out of that for some key games will be disappointing. But yeah, a good win for Eastleigh.
Yeah, obviously haven't seen that one, but I suppose at the one that will probably really hurt from those dismissals there is the one for Ryan Fallowfield, because that's two yellow cards just 3 minutes apart. And you'd think that having collected one in the immediate aftermath of that Zizibar sending off, that a more experienced player like him would, you know that he was on a yellow and not do something to collect a second one. So that looks like a disappointment from the outside, but I'm happy to be stand corrected by that when we actually see the footage.
Yeah, I've seen the second one. I don't think I saw his initial booking. I don't think there can be no arguments about the second yellow. I didn't see the first. Zizibar, depends how you look at it, really. Aaron McLean is an ex-pro footballer whose word we certainly listened to with respect, and he said it was a leg breaker. It didn't look that bad to me, if I'm honest, but Aaron would know an awful lot better than I would. That leaves, or it left rather, one game to talk about. We've left it till last, and it's perhaps the biggest extreme on the day. Wealdstone, Joe, we've talked about all the games they've got left. You made the point last week that it doesn't matter how many you've got if you're not winning games. They're not winning games. They're losing games. I think there's three or four on the bounce now for Wealdstone. And they've lost to a Boreham Wood side who remain in the relegation zone, but only on goal difference. And they've closed to within three goals of that team, Wealdstone, thanks to a 4-0 win. Four different scorers. And it's all happened 1 week after a rather special announcement.
Yeah, obviously Luke Gerrard is going to step away at the end of the season. Obviously done brilliant work there and getting them to the play a couple of times, and obviously getting them to the playoff final, and obviously that FA Cup run. So this squad's going to have to go through a lot of rebuilding in the summer, and it perhaps represents the best time to, you know, amicably part ways with Luke Garrard, given all that change. But yeah, you know, they clearly put in a performance for him yesterday and came out fighting. Perhaps, you know, the announcement made the players give that little bit more, and it certainly looked that way. For, as you say, 4-0 win, another goal for Shabanga, that's now 6-9 for him. And for Wealdstone, yeah, it's going to be tough now. Games to play. Obviously, they're a part-time team as well. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult. Speaking to Max Kretschmar at the game against Kidderminster, he was adamant they up. But they probably need to start playing like it. So, yeah, disappointing for them. Jack Cook was not included in the start today and didn't actually come on, and they've struggled without his leadership at the back yesterday. So yeah, disappointing afternoon for Wealdstone, but a big 3 points for Bournemouth.
So looking at the bottom, and then Oxford City obviously already relegated. Dorking, 3 games left, 44 points. Kidderminster just 2 games left, 46. Bournemouth 3 games left, 47, and Wealdstone 5 games left, 47. And then York on 50 points, but with only 2 games left. It does look as if the bottom four is likely to be made up, or the remaining 3 places are likely to be made up from those 5 clubs. But it's worth pointing out that Fylde, Woking, Maidenhead and Ebbsfleet on 52 points are not yet safe mathematically. And nor are Eastleigh in 14th place on 53. I mean, the one thing, Dickie, we can conclude is this is going to the wire, isn't it? This is going to be one of the most incredible tension-gripped last days of the National League season that we've ever had.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, we've got those playoff places which are still not set. And that looks likely to go to the final day. I'm fairly sure that the relegation places are going to go that way. I think the relegation position's complicated by the fact that teams have got more than, you know, games in hand over others. So there's going to be a really keen eye, especially from us, I would imagine, on those midweek games when they get played, because they're going to have a really big say in what happens.
Absolutely. There's a really eye-catching one on Thursday night. And I've got work commitments that I might try and get out of to get down to Grosvenor Vale. Wealdstone against Dorking on Thursday night. Wealdstone, of course, I think have to play on Tuesday as well before that. They've got to fit 5 games in you know, what remains of the season, which, frankly, as we record on this Sunday morning, is less than 2 weeks now. So, yeah, it's bizarre. End to the season in lots of ways, but we wish supporters of all of those clubs that they get through the next couple of weeks without too much stress and tension. It's certainly a different stress and tension to battling for the playoffs, and that's one thing that that I can be grateful for this morning as a Shots fan. That pretty much wraps up the National League, chaps, unless you've got any other business.
I see on Wednesday night that Halifax actually playing Oldham. So that might be one of the spots actually tied up. If Oldham, you know, don't win, that's probably their last chance saloon into the playoff. Big game on Wednesday night.
Just before we turn our attentions to the National League's North and South, a mention we don't want to really have to mention, Dickie, but more rumblings regarding Southend United off the pitch.
Yeah, unfortunately so. I think there's a talk of there being another winding up order against the club with a date to be heard on the 17th of April. I suppose the thing, we don't know much of the details, so we're not going to try and go over this forensically. I suppose the thing that struck me really from this was just the sense that clearly the takeover hasn't been completely finished at this point. I'm assuming that this is a creditor from Ron Martin's time at the club. And yeah, and it's just messy, isn't it? It's just Southend fans. I think they thought they were clear of this now. And it's just, we know their season's going to end somewhere around mid-table, which is fine. But yeah, it's just a blow for them to have to be going through the same sort of things again, over and over again.
Yeah, clearly it's a creditor with some clout, a creditor that's prepared to take the matter to court rather than perhaps be given a very small percentage of what they're owed. We don't have too much more detail on it. It seems to me, and maybe I'm just being a bit cynical about this, that if they get their way, then somebody somewhere will stump up the money to keep the whole thing rumbling on. But it is sad for Southend fans, especially as they thought they were heading for happier times. And certainly they've really found some momentum towards the end of the National League season that will carry them nicely, they hope, into next season. All right, we're going to move on now to cover the National League South. Joe, you were at the crunch game in the National League South yesterday. And, well, to be honest with you, everything was set right. Whether it happened in the game at Yeovil or in the game involving Chelmsford, but everything was set, really, for Yeovil to lift the National League South trophy at Huish Park on Saturday. But it didn't happen, and the circumstances around it were somewhat controversial, weren't they?
Yeah, a disappointing afternoon for Yeovil in the end. They made it, said that it was going to be a party atmosphere, and yeah, it wasn't in the end, and it really should have been. Yeovil managed to score late on to make it 2-2, but the referee and the linesman decided that it was offside, albeit having looked with the benefit. It was definitely onside and by a good half. So that was disappointing for Yeovil. But, you know, can't take anything away from Worthing. Second time I've watched them live in the flesh this season. Again, outstanding. Couple of new players that I've never really seen before who played really, really well. Brad Dollahan, young lad up front, come for the academy. Ollie Pearce managed to get another 2 goals to his tally. The first on the spot, the second a breakaway goal. Alex Fisher did give Yeovil hope of trying to get back into the game with a deft header. But yeah, it wasn't to be for Yeovil, but Worthing go marching on.
Yeah, Ollie Pearce closing in on 40 goals. From memory, I think Dave Tarpey might have been the last striker to score 40-plus goals in the National League South. If I've got that wrong, listeners, do message us and let us know.
After the dust had settled at Huish Park, Joe caught up with the Worthing caretaker manager, Aaron Racine.
Aaron, you've had some really good days in charge of Worthing. That's probably the best of them?
I think given the occasion, given coming to a place like this, and also given the squad in terms of, they're still quite a young squad, so I think they'd appreciate this occasion, just even coming to play here, let alone getting that result. So yeah, I think that is it, that is right.
And obviously you managed to win 3-1 in the end with that third goal from Ollie Pearce. Are you perhaps slightly disappointed that you had chances to score more than you did actually?
Yeah, look, you can't be greedy. I think I'm more disappointed in terms of how we potentially didn't play like we normally do with the ball in possession. We didn't quite control the game like we can do and we have done in the past. But on the flip of that, I think we defended it excellently, which, again, in the past we haven't done so well. So it's a catch-22.
And does that speak volumes of your side, the fact that you yourself are disappointed with how well your team played with the ball, and yet you've had so many nice messages from people here at Yeovil saying how well you actually play with the ball?
Yeah, I think when we played Yeovil at home, I think we played really well, and that has obviously stuck in the minds. And I think, again, today, in patches, we did play well. It just wasn't to the standard of what we're normally used to. So we just need to get back to that standard.
And obviously you must be quite pleased how you've managed to come to a game like this against a 6,000-strong crowd and pretty much control the game, would you say?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say controlled it. I think it was quite end-to-end. I just think we defended really well. And I think I said to the guys at the beginning of the game, this occasion, this fan, these fan, the fan base, sorry, if we can start fast and put them under pressure, which we did, it's a hard place for a home team to try and get back to when you have fans that are so passionate like this. So we kind of tried to use that to advantage, and obviously we did in the first half.
And that's one thing that I've certainly associated with Worthing since you've taken interim charge, the fact that you've always been a good footballing side, but you've perhaps defended better than you did under the last manager. Are you pleased with how well your team defending now?
Yeah, I think like for me, and I think naturally because I'm a defender, I think that's always been in the back of my mind. I want to make sure we defend really well. And there's been a lot of messages on how we defend as a team, as individuals. And it is nice to see that, you know, we can do it and we can weather storms and we can see games through when we are under the cosh against a big team like this with a big fan base.
And one player that particularly stood out for you was Bradley Donohan up front. Obviously a really young lad, but I thought he gave two really good centre-halves in Morgan Williams and Jake Wannell a lot of problems this afternoon.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He runs all day, first and foremost, which is excellent. And on top of that, his movement's clever. So like you say, he's caused them a bit of a hassle, two experienced centre-halves in this league. And on top of that, getting his goal as well, which was excellent.
And you go into the last couple of games now. What is the message from you going into those games? And what do you need to do to make sure you can get promoted?
We need to be better still. I think that's a clear message that I'm trying to get across. I think we, like I said, we haven't controlled the last couple of games like we can do. So if we can do that and then defend like we have done these last couple of games, I think we'll go into these final few games where we can confirm our playoff place and hopefully hit some good form in the playoffs. But that'll be the message. It's not, nothing's done, nothing's perfect. There's still room to improve, and we'll look to improve on it.
Part of the reason why Yeovil couldn't celebrate the title yesterday was because Chelmsford did get a point, didn't they? Somehow, some way, with nine men. And they were mightily close to getting all three. But it should have known better against Scott Davis Slough. They always score late on, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They've got such a knack of staying in games and getting late goals. And it was one of those yesterday. I see it was Cook on the score sheet. I'm assuming that's Trey Cook-Appiah that's on loan from Wealdstone. A really good point on the road for Slough, given that the home form hasn't been as good. For Chelmsford, obviously, a useful point, well in the mix for those playoffs. And obviously disappointing to lose two players yesterday in a Castiglione. I did see someone of a Chelmsford persuasion in the coaching staff having a moan yesterday that the refereeing performance was not good and two bizarre red cards. But I think that might be the second time this season that Chelmsford have finished a game in nine men. Disappointing for them, especially that they looked like for so long with nine men. Good point for Slough.
Biggest shock in that game for me was seeing that Chelmsford had had two players sent off and neither of them were Dave Winfield. Sorry, Dave, if you're listening. I'm sure you won't be. All right, that's Yeovil then, 86 points. Chelmsford are second with 80. They have the same goal difference, and that's the reason why Yeovil can't quite yet celebrate. One more point will do it for the Glovers. And Braintree as well, we should mention in that equation, and Maidstone, because they've both got three games left and they're on 77 points. So each of those sides in second, third and fourth place could still reach 86 points. I didn't realise there were so many teams still involved in that equation. There's very little to split Braintree in third and Maidstone in fourth, Joe. They both have 77 points and just six goals separate them. How good a battle is that, given the massive advantage that you get for finishing third rather than fourth?
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting battle. Even Worthing in fifth, you know, they're
still in that
2
battle.
Points back.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting, and I think whoever gets that home form will really fancy their chances. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And Braintree and Maidstone couldn't actually be separated yesterday in that they both won away from home 1-0. So the title's virtually wrapped up. The race of the playoffs certainly isn't.
It was a really low-scoring game in the National League South yesterday. Only Dartford and Worthing managed to score two goals or more. Quite incredible, really. Just to fill in the detail on those two sides that we just mentioned, Braintree won 1-0 away at Western Supermare. It was a Blackwell goal in the 75th minute. And Maidstone United scored a couple of minutes later than that to win 1-0 at Farnborough. We have to doff our caps to Farnborough. They had won 7 games on the trot before that. And even though they've got better player availability this time, they do seem to have triggered the same jinx that happened last season. They were motoring in on the playoffs, and as soon as they get within touching distance of them, something falters in their points tally. And then, as we've already mentioned, Worthing, 5th, 75 points. So all those 4 teams, Chelmsford, Braintree, Maidstone and Worthing, all still battling for positions within the playoffs. They all look pretty likely to make them. Hampton and Richmond, well, they were romping a couple of months ago. Now they're just gradually putting points together here and there. They drew 1-1 at home to Taunton, got a good start through Ben Seymour, but Callum Dolman equalised on half-time. So Taunton got away with a precious point. We'll focus on the bottom end of the National League South table in a little while. And then it's also pretty tight between the teams in and around that final promotion place, isn't it, Joe? Bath City sit in it, but they were frustrated yesterday by a team who probably aren't going to make the playoffs now, but have certainly given a good account of themselves this season.
Yeah, you know, Tonbridge Angels are always a tricky side and they're a good manager, and they managed to get themselves a share of the scores yesterday. Cody Cook again on the score sheet. He's had a really good season for Bath. Yeah, disappointing for Bath in that that's now 3 games of their last 4 that they've drawn, when, you know, if they'd have won those games, then they could have potentially been in the race for getting into those top 3. So, yeah, disappointing for Bath, but another useful point for Tonbridge that, you know, just keeps them steady in mid-table, and obviously they'll be looking towards next year now.
Averley sit just outside 8th. They got a point away at Truro, which presumably was played at Gloucester. 2 goals in a minute, really. Daniel Sullivan for Truro, Frankie Terry a minute later, both goals coming in the 10th and 11th minute. Jason Ring then sent off for Averley, but they saw out the game for what might prove to be a precious point. And Danny Scopes, if you listen into this podcast, as I know you sometimes do, do come and join us again on the podcast before the end of the season, because, you know, we've all pointed out just what a terrific job you've done at keeping Averley in and around that promotion and playoff race up to this point. Farnborough are 9th, and then now down to 10th, Joe, St Albans, who slipped up at home to Chippenham and saw their, well, ever-fading playoff hopes take another blow.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, given that as much as you might say that teams hitting a bit of form are likely to get into the playoffs, I think teams hitting poor form are likely to drop out of it. Looks that way for St Albans. Obviously, no wins in their last 5, 4 defeats in that time. But yeah, I mean, you know, Chippenham, their best run of form all season, 4 wins. They probably will still fancy getting into the playoffs. You know, they're hitting form, playing really well, only 6 points off, and got 4 games to go. So yeah, going to be interesting for that battle. I think Chippenham are most certainly on the way up.
Yeah, so Chippenham close to within 3 points of St Albans. They're in 10th and 11th. Slough, 12th. And, you know, equally, probably playoffs would be a step too far. I think Scotty Davis, when he come on, said, you know, like a couple of months ago, we were worried about being involved in the relegation race. So he'll be grateful for that. And, of course, another point on Saturday, albeit late on. Elsewhere in the National League South, let's do a little bit of a roundup. In fact, no, before we do that, let's focus on the bottom end. Havant and Waterlooville against Dartford. That was an intriguing-looking match yesterday. Now, Ross McNeely, the former Aldershot Town manager and Dorking head coach, has been getting out and about and watching a few National League games of late. He went along to Havant and Waterlooville on Saturday. and kindly sent us this little report.
Haven't won, Dartford 2, a game that was sort of billed as a relegation six-pointer for Borth, Borth in the relegation zone. Borth absolutely needing the points and needing to win if they're going to stand any chance of getting safe and sort of surviving in the National League South. Haven't started the better, started on the front foot, forced the Dartford keeping a couple of early saves. There was a chance that they just sort of flashed over early doors, Ryan Seager. But Dartford grew into the game, and certainly as sort of going into half time, I think they paused with a save off the keeper, Ross Warner. And if it wasn't for Ross Warner, it would have been, could have easily been at least two or three goals up Dartford coming in at half time, caused a lot of problems with balls in the box. So yeah, Dartford would have been definitely disappointed to come in level 0-0 at half time. Haven't again started more positive second half, scored early. A good goal from James Roberts, sort of curled in from the left into the far corner, after a sort of a layoff from Ryan Seager. And then Dartford scored pretty much straight after from a set piece, and from there put pressure on and scored another. And ultimately were very, very just winners, Dartford. I thought they could have easily won by more than two goals. Certainly in that period, straight after having scored, had a couple of chances themselves, got on the box. So were Dartford, in my opinion, were much deserved winners, and certainly get 3 points on the board, which will help them in the sort of fight for relegation. And leaves Havant in a sort of very difficult situation as they try to stave off relegation.
Great stuff, Ross. Another string to your bow. Thank you very much indeed for that. Let us know where you're off to next week and you can report in again. But looking at that battle, at the bottom end, Joe, what do you make of it now? Obviously, Dover already gone. That was a crushing blow yesterday, wasn't it, for Havant and Waterlooville? And they're all bar mathematically out of it now.
Yeah, we've said it before, last chance saloon, and I think that probably was yesterday. If they're going to beat anybody, then an out-of-form Dartford. Dartford, you know, really good win for them to come from behind, especially goals from Joris Numbard, and she's obviously interested the likes of West Ham United this year. And yeah, massive win, much needed for AD Pennock, not really got going since he's come into the club. And, you know, that was pretty much last chance for them. They needed to win to make it close.
Hemel drew 1-1 against Dover, and a couple of other games to feature. A terrific win for Adam Murray's Eastbourne Borough against rejuvenated Weymouth under the stewardship of Mark Molesley. Again, as we hinted at last week. He's got them outside the playoff positions now. An early strike from Matt Green did the business there. And just the one other game to discuss, Joe, and sadly it involves your side, Torquay, who lost again, who had a man sent off to Welling, who we've sung the praises of over the last couple of months. But that National League South table looks rather precarious this morning for Torquay United. Just 2 points clear of the relegation zone now. And their biggest hope is that there will be four sides worse than them this season. But they're right knee deep in it now with four games to go.
Yeah, they are. This is probably a position that we did. I think yesterday against Welling, you know, Welling have shown this season, especially under Rod Stringer, that they are a capable side. You know, they've beaten Yeovil and Worthing 4-1 at home. And that's a tricky place to go. Last time we won the league, we lost at Welling in that season. And it was a really tough loss again yesterday. Ross Marshall sent off, as he so often is. Struggled to half no defeat. So disappointing afternoon for Welling, obviously doing really well under Rod Stringer. Actually signed a new contract in the week for Welling. That's be really positive news as part of their planning for next season.
Great stuff. That wraps up the National League South. There might not have been many goals in the National League South for the National League North, Dickie, were at sixes and sevens on Saturday, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. There was we had a six go at one team getting six away from home. We had another team scoring seven at home. So, yeah, that's where that comes from. We've mentioned the fact that Tamworth sewed their title up yesterday. Did that with a 1-1 draw at home to Warrington, not the traditional clean sheet that Tamworth keep. They had a goal from Nathan Shikuna to put them into the lead. Eze got an equaliser for Warrington. But ultimately, it didn't really matter what happened in that one, because the only team that could have caught Tamworth was Chorley. Chorley went down to a 3-1 defeat at Buxton, goals from DiGerolamo, Shields and Hunt. There was a Scott Wilson goal for Chorley, but not enough. And so Tamworth are crown champions of the division. And as I say, we gave our congratulations to them at the start. We think they're still out celebrating. We were hoping to speak to goalkeeper Jas Singh today. But yeah, he's largely radio silence from him. So I suspect he and his teammates are out celebrating somewhere. Scunthorpe, they're in second place in the league. We knew that they couldn't catch them, that they've played one more game than Chorley. Chorley still haven't played their game in hand. Scunthorpe had a 4-1 win over Hereford to maintain their grip on that second place in the playoffs, which could be all important given the home advantage. Goals from Roberts, Cogan, Liam McAlinden, Beeston as well. Tope Adeboye, Obadiah had put Hereford into the lead. But yeah, a third red card in a week for Hereford in that game. They went down to 9 men, winning 2-1 at Banbury in midweek. And I saw one of their fans suggest they were going to have to make use of their squad, and this might mean a chance for Adam Rooney. Adam Rooney played yesterday and was sent off. So, yeah, not a particularly disciplined week for them. And Hereford now 5 points outside the playoffs, just 2 games to go. I don't think they're going to make it.
No, and ironically, it was Chorley, as you said, who had the still chance of catching Tamworth prior to yesterday. And Chorley find themselves down to fourth now. Brackley got the job done away at Boston United, who, of course, still harbour hopes of finishing in a playoff position themselves. But a really ruthless Connor Hall and Danny Newton, both, of course, who've played a level higher. Kelsey Mooney, of course, again, for Boston United. But sadly, on this occasion, Dickie, his strike partner couldn't come up with a goal that would have got Boston a point.
No, nothing for Jimmy Knowles yesterday, just a Mooney goal. He did equalise Hall's opener for Brackley, but Newton scored in the 32nd minute. And yet stayed that way from then on. I had a quick look through the table. Boston, they're just 3 points outside. You've got three teams in the playoff positions on 71 points, and you've got three teams outside the playoff positions on 68 points. So it's just one win separating those sides, or one defeat, and that could be a whole massive change around. Yeah, Boston have sort of dropped out of the playoff positions in the last week or so. They're not out of it completely, but it's better to be on the inside looking out than on the outside looking in at this stage, I think.
Well, let's look at two of those playoff hopefuls now who, well, Chester were at sixes and South Shields were at sevens. We won't go through every goal scorer, of course, but the key highlights from that one. Chester very nearly came up with six different scorers. Burke spoiled the party, of course. And good to see Ben Tollett on the score sheet there. 90 plus 5. So another double header at Gloucester yesterday with Truro and Gloucester playing. It didn't work out too well for Gloucester, did it, Dickie? We've already talked about their precarious position at the bottom end of the table. And I think maybe you can confirm this, but I think they may have been relegated yesterday.
Yeah, they were. Gloucester were relegated by this result. They had a huge uphill task, even if they'd have won that one yesterday. They still had so much to do. And yeah, it's Gloucester's fortunes in the last few years. Incredible, really. Moving back into the city of Gloucester with a move back to New Meadow Park. They had a whole load of investment into the team when James Rowe was the manager. Rowe defected, went to Chesterfield. A lot of the team followed him. And since then, it's been a steady downward progression that's really accelerated this season. I think the fall away. Gloucester were a playoff team last season. I think they finished seventh. And this season, Yeah, they're going down, unfortunately. As you say, six goals in that one for Chester. They still remain 3 points outside the playoffs. There have been some question marks about Callum McIntyre, their manager, raised by a few fans this week after a 2-0 defeat to Alfreton at home on Monday, which had a few people questioning McIntyre. He gave them their answer yesterday with that 6-1. But again, they've still got work to do to get into the playoffs. And they're in that position of needing favours from other sides as well now.
Yeah, Alfreton and Curzon are sixth and seventh on 71 points. They started the day on 70. They played each other. They couldn't score and they had to share the points. That one ended 0-0. But don't worry about that, Alfreton and Curzon fans. South Shields made up for that with a 7-goal romp against bottom side and already relegated Bishop Stortford. And the name that really caught my eye from that one, when you look at the production line of strikers that have been through Gateshead in recent seasons, here's one that got away. And since he got away, he's enjoyed playing week in, week out and smashing up the goal tally. Paul Blackett.
Yeah, a sensational season for Paul Blackett. His hat-trick yesterday in this 7-0 win over Bishop Stortford took him to 29 goals for the season. I had a quick look at the scoring charts this morning. He's 10 clear of the player in second place. So he's going to win. There is no such thing as a golden boot in National League North, but he is going to be the top scorer in the division. I would imagine there's every chance he'll probably be in those representative sides of the best team in the National League North when we get to the end of the season. That's something we might want to start turning our attention to in the next few weeks, gentlemen, our teams of the season. I'm sure other people will be doing it. And yeah, he's powered South Shields into a playoff position. And having looked like they were going to have a tidy season, a competitive season, and establish themselves in this division, all of a sudden they're looking at possibly taking the next step again.
Absolutely. You don't need to encourage Joe to pick his team of the season. He's already got a squad of 50 for each division, and he'd be narrowing it down as we speak. And I think he'd have just been sharpening his pencil on Paul Blackett. Joe, do you want to come in quickly on that one? That's a tremendous tally, isn't it? Obviously, it's not to the proportions that Ollie Pearce has hit in the South, but if Pearce and Blackett aren't in your teams of the year for the North and South, well, I'm going to defriend you.
Yeah, you will be glad to hear that both of them are firmly on the 50-man list. Quite a few of the people that scored yesterday are. So, yeah, really good season for Paul Blackett.
Spennymoor Town and the other team on 68 points. They had to be content with a draw, a 1-1 draw away at Scarborough on Saturday. Scarborough took the lead in the first half through Barnes. Harris equalised on the hour mark for Spennymoor. Just from the remaining games we haven't talked about in the National League, North Dickey focusing in on that bottom end again. Banbury 1, Kings Lynn 1, didn't really sort out anything in particular, did it? Or did it condemn Banbury to a relegation?
Banbury could still escape, but they'd have to win all four of their remaining games and hope that, I think there's three teams clustered on 50 above them that they could catch. They'd have to hope that all three of those teams didn't collect a single point in what's left of the season. So you'd think it's very, very unlikely. Banbury did pick up a first point of in 12 games yesterday. They'd lost 11 straight. So if you think they're going to turn that round and win four in a row, I'd suggest that perhaps some intervention might be needed because it's certainly not looking likely. Rushall had a fantastic result yesterday, a 2-1 win away at Blyth. It keeps Blyth nervous towards the bottom of the division and keeps Rushall in with a chance of getting out of that one. There was a goal in that one for Owen Asani. They've got him on loan from Derby County. He scored a lot of goals at Step 3 for Nuneaton earlier this season, and he's been a big addition for them. And I think the other goal in that game for Rushall, Ronan Maher, I think he's on loan to them from Walsall. So, I mentioned this last week, they've made good use of the loan market, having lost Danny Waldron to Southend, and they've still got a fighting chance, which is, you know, that's all you can ask, isn't it, at this stage of the season when you're in trouble, that you've still, they're still able to pull out a result like that from time to time, Rushall.
Yeah, and we've got quite a unique situation appearing at the bottom end of the National League North. We've already suggested that 50 points might not be enough to keep you up in the National League, they won't be enough to keep you up in the National League North, because Farsley Celtic joined those two or four mentioned sides on 50 points with a 1-0 win at home to Peterborough Sports. Coulson with the winner in the 67th minute. And that bizarrely, Dickie, leaves Farsley 21st on 50 points, Rushall 20th on 50 points, and Blyth Spartans 19th on 50 points, with the better of the three goal differences, but only two games left, whereas Farsley and Banbury still have two and three games. Whereas Rushall and Farsley still have three games left.
Yeah, it really is going to be a question of who blinks first at the bottom of that division. That was Farsley's first 3 points since a victory over Blyth on the 20th of February. And my goodness, they really needed that one, because they have dropped into the relegation places. But they're still in there with a chance to get out. It's exceptionally tight in the North. There's only seven teams in the North who, by my reckoning, are either already promoted, already relegated, or are locked in mid-table, sufficiently far away from both promotion and relegation to not be involved in either. So that's 17 teams in the division who've still got issues to resolve with three games of the season left.
Yeah, and that includes Peterborough Sports, who we've said weeks ago had almost got themselves to safety, but they're on 52 points and not yet safe. Also on 52 points are Darlington, and they'd be really grateful that they got the job done on Saturday. And they got it done inside 9 minutes with the main man and Cornish. They beat Southport by 2-0. And Southport themselves just on 53. So they're not yet safe. Then there's a gap of 6 points up to Buxton, who are on 59, who most definitely are safe. A quick scroll of the divisions tells me that we have indeed covered all the games. Now, congratulations to Tamworth. And as for Jaz Singh, who's promised he'll come on this pod once Tamworth had secured the title, well, clearly it's sing when you're winning, pod when you've sobered up again.
Yes, last word.
Last, and that's not to assume that Jaz Singh drinks alcohol, by the way. It just worked. It just fitted. Joe, final word from you this week, maybe casting an eye over to some of those games coming up in midweek, where some teams, as we've mentioned already, like Wealdstone and probably Taunton and Truro, have all got to play Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, got a big game at home against Worthing to try and get to it.
Okay, listeners, that's it for another NL Full-Time podcast this week. Rob's had to depart slightly early because work is beckoning him. As usual, our thanks to Rob and to Joe for joining us for our review of the National League. Also, big thanks to Rob Law for his contribution and to Luke Waterfall. And it just remains for me to say to our editor, Luke, play the theme tune.